on Town Hall. My name is Josh. I am Scott's Communications Director. I will be moderating this call. Scott is actually on the floor voting right now. He will be calling in momentarily. In the meantime, I wanted to let you all know that if you'd like to ask a question, press *3 and you'll be connected to a staff member who will assist you. Also, if you would like to sign up for Congressman Murphy's newsletter, you can press 1 at any time, and you will sign up for that as well. You will not be disconnected from the call. So tonight, the Congressman is looking forward to talking about the economy and what he's working on to create jobs. But most importantly, this is a chance for him to continue talking with constituents. And he has been to all 137 towns in the 28th District, and tonight's phone town hall is another way for him to communicate. I believe we will have him in just a moment.
And so, Josh, can you hear me?
There he is.
Excellent. Yep. Thanks, everybody, for coming in. I apologize for the background noise. We just finished taking a vote on the floor, and I am walking back over to my office right now, so hopefully we'll clear that noise in just a second as I get across the street. But I wanted to say thanks to everybody for being here tonight. I think it's a great opportunity to do these, for me to be able to hear from people in the 20th District, even while I'm down here in Washington working on the business that we have at hand. So I really appreciate you being here. If you have a question, please do press *3, and you'll be able to get your question in. And one of the parts that of this job I take very seriously is being as open and transparent as possible, and that's why we post my schedule online. That's why I travel around and do town hall meetings all over the district, as I think you heard Josh say. I've actually been to all 137 towns in the last year or so. And that's why I want to have meetings like this tonight. So I do really appreciate you being here and want to be able to hear from you about what's going on in the community and answer your questions. So a couple of things I want to talk about very briefly. You're all aware that we are still working on health care reform down here and trying to figure out how to make the health care system better for everyone, giving people more choices and giving people more control, and at the same time trying to hold down costs. We'll probably talk about that. But in addition to that, which you've heard a lot about in the press, we've been working on a whole host of other things, and in particular working on stuff with respect to the economy. While it's better now than it was a year ago, the economy is getting stronger, it is still nowhere near where it needs to be. And too many people all over the 20th District are out of work, still looking for work, and having trouble finding it. So that's really the focus of what I spend most of my time on. As you know, my background is as a small business person, and I've been trying to use that background to be most effective at getting our economy moving in upstate New York. My belief is that the government doesn't create the jobs. The government sets the table. The government sets the rules and sets up the structures and makes investments in infrastructure, but it's our small businesses that are really going to create those jobs, and that's what we've got to be focused on. How can we help our small businesses get access to capital, encourage people to be entrepreneurial, set up rules that are going to make them ready and able to hire people and put people back to work. And that's the focus that I have here, and that's what I'm working on back in the district as well. On Monday, we're having an economic summit in Saratoga Springs. I meet with a lot of our local business leaders, talk to them about what's going on, and to hear their thoughts on other things that we could be doing down here in Washington. The other thing I spend a lot of time on is military affairs and veterans issues. I serve on the Armed Services Committee. And every day, men and women from the 20th District and from all over this country put their lives on the line to protect us. And I take it very seriously. I think it's my responsibility to be in touch with them. It's part of why I went over to Afghanistan recently, and to work on their behalf to make sure they have what they need to be successful on the ground over there in Afghanistan and when they get back here, to make sure that we're giving our veterans the medical care they need, the access to education, and the help they need in starting businesses when they're back here. And that's stuff that I spend a lot of time working on. I will tell you, for those of you who haven't gotten to travel there, which is probably most of you, I was very impressed with what I saw in Afghanistan. The morale of our troops, the clarity of the mission, it really felt to me like they were doing an excellent job and were in a good frame of mind about it. The people I talked to from the 20th District, as well as from all over the country, were really feeling like they had now, with General McChrystal, the leadership they've lacked, and a clear mission in terms of what they're trying to do, trying to help the Afghan government get control over the country and deny the Taliban and Al-Qaeda a chance to reform and attack us again. And that I heard consistently that people
had been frustrated that we hadn't had that clarity of mission in the past, but they really feel like we've got it now, and they were very excited about that. One other thing I'd love to just chat about a little bit is some of the work we've done with some of our Vietnam-era veterans. We've worked with dozens of folks that have been disabled as a result of exposure to Agent Orange, and one veteran in particular that we've worked with is a gentleman named Bob Hugg from Rensselaer County, who got cancer of the larynx and is unable to speak now as a result of exposure to Agent Orange, but the government and the bureaucracy was denying him the disability benefits he was entitled to. And we were able to, through a number of different efforts, get him about $80,000 in medical cost reimbursement and get him some back pay for his disability that he was entitled to but had been denied through some bureaucratic snafus. And these are the kind of projects that we work on for our veterans every day in our office, and that I think is one of the most important things that we can do. So I think at this point I've talked probably plenty, and I'm happy to let people get a chance to get involved and ask some questions. So you press *3 on your phone. A member of my staff will assist you in getting your questions. And I'll also remind you that if you want to sign up to be on our e-newsletter, you can do that by pressing 1 on your phone as well, and that way we can stay in touch with you going forward. So, Josh, do we have the first question?
Yeah, our first question is going to come from Dan in Taconic. And just before we get to Dan, I wanted to let everyone know that one more thing we're going to be doing is hosting congressional field offices, and I will give you the details for that after this first caller. So we're going to go to Dan from Taconic.
Hi, Congressman.
Hi, Dan.
My question is, you talked about the economy and getting jobs back. It's clear to me that one of the big problems facing all of us economically is China. China does not play by the rules. They have, the list is long, but they don't play fair, and they target our industries one after another after another, and it's really a terrible situation, and I'd like to know what is happening in Washington to counter that, because I don't think anything will change until we do.
Sure. Thanks, Dan, for your comment, which it's a problem that a lot of people have been talking about. There are two things that I'm working on specifically that I think will have an impact on that trade imbalance that we have with China. One is we need to redo our tax policy with respect to overseas investment for companies here in America. This is something that is called deferral, and that's the technical term. But what we have done is we have set up a system here over the last 20 years where if a company invests in a place like China with low taxes, they will get those low tax rates. And if they invest in the United States and build their plant here, they'll pay a higher tax rate. It's totally backwards. We are encouraging our American companies to build their plants in China instead of to build them in upstate New York. And the tax policy is wrong. It's something that we need to change, and it's something that we're working on right now in terms of doing. It's going to be, I think, very effective in terms of getting our companies to build their next plant here as opposed to building it in China. The other thing I'm working on is a piece of legislation that Mark Warner has passed in the Senate, and we are working on doing in the House, which is a bill to give a tax incentive to companies that bring jobs back here. So if you've got a plant overseas or you've put some jobs somewhere else, if you will bring them back to an area here in the United States that needs jobs, we'll give you a tax incentive. So those are real jobs. We know that they'll be there because it's going to be in the form of a loan that you'd have to repay if you don't actually bring the jobs here and they don't stay here. But it's something that I think will be very beneficial to our company. So those are two specific things that we are working on right now to try to have an impact on what's going on with our trade imbalance with China and with our companies here in America deciding to put their plants overseas, which is something that we sure shouldn't be encouraging.
So before we get to our next question, I mentioned that we're going to be hosting several congressional field offices. What those are is we have members of our staff come to your town and are available to sit with you to talk about whether you need help cutting through bureaucratic red tape or whether you just want to know what Scott's been working on. We understand that not everyone can make it to one of our offices. So on Thursday, tomorrow actually, we're going to have two congressional field offices in Dutchess. The first is going to be in LaGrangeville at 10 a.m., and that's going to be at the LaGrange Town Hall. And the second will be in Unionville at 1 p.m., and that will be at the Unionville Town Hall. So our next question, we're going to go to Vera. Vera, you are live.
Oh, yes. Hi. Oh, it's a pleasure to speak with you. You know, I really dislike intensely New York City control over our lands here in the watershed, and I'm wondering what you can do to encourage the gas drilling that maybe we're all hoping that would revive some of the economy here in Delaware County.
Yeah, Vera, thank you for your question, and I hear about the gas drilling a lot. This is a new opportunity for a lot of economic development, potentially. I believe strongly that we need to have a policy of energy independence in the United States, and that developing our own resources for things like gas is one of the ways we do that. It's a huge issue for us internationally, and it's a jobs issue for us here at home to be developing our own independent energy sources and supplies. That said, the gas drilling in Delaware County is something that I want to be sure we make. We're very careful about one thing, and that is that when we do drilling, I want it to be done in a way that protects absolutely our water supply. None of us want to see any of the chemicals used in drilling end up in our wells, in our homes, or in the local reservoir for any of our municipalities. So that's a critical issue. Where it is in the process is that New York State, the Department of Environmental Conservation, came out with some rules last fall about how gas drilling could occur in New York. Just so people know, we have 14,000 gas wells in New York already, but these are more advanced wells where they do what's called hydrofracking, and there's going to be some special rules around them. They got a lot of comments back, and they are reworking those rules, and I think later this year we'll see final rules from them about how this could go forward. And one of the things that is important to me is that we maintain local control over these things and don't have New York City telling us in upstate New York what we do. I think that's one of the real problems we've had with the reservoirs there, and I think that the local people need to be in control of these decisions and not have New York City making those decisions. So I'm excited about seeing where the rules go, and I'm hopeful that we're going to be able to find that right balance of economic development, protecting our water supply, and allowing us to have local control over these issues.
So before we get to our next caller, I would just like to remind everyone that if you have a question, press *3 and you'll be connected to a member of our staff who will assist you. And if you'd like to sign up for Scott's e-newsletter, you can press 1 at any time and you will be signed up. So our next question is going to be coming from Ralph. Ralph, go ahead.
Hi, Congressman. Very nice to be speaking with you this evening. My question is concerns budgets and spending and revenues. Presently, the federal government, New York State, a lot of other states, and some counties, et cetera, are basically bankrupt. And they're borrowing money or not borrowing money or slashing budgets, et cetera. And my question to you is, how do you plan on trying to reduce our spending and reduce our deficits? Because we're drowning in red ink.
Absolutely, Ralph. I appreciate your question, and that is one that a lot of people speak to me about on a regular basis because there is so much concern. A number of things that I've done already in my time here to try to get our budgeting process and our budgets in order. I'm a member of the Blue Dog Coalition, which is Democrats who are focused on fiscal responsibility. And one of our biggest issues is, and was this year, passing a rule called Pay As You Go. The rules we had in the 1990s when we got the federal budget to a surplus, it was taken out in 2001 or 2002, and you've seen the train wreck we've had over the last 9 years in terms of our budget here in Washington. It's a simple rule. It's the kind of rule that I can teach my 8-year-old. If you want to do something new, if you want to spend some money on something new, you got two choices. Find something to cut to offset it or raise a tax to pay for it. Once you have people have to raise a tax to pay for stuff, it slows things down a lot, and they get more serious about priorities. It worked in the 90s, Democrats and Republicans working together. We just passed it, and the president signed it into law about a month ago, and it's going to work to help us get this thing turned around. The other thing that I've been pushing for, and we just got done, is a fiscal commission, where we got away from the politicians making these decisions and put it in an outside body to make recommendations about how to get our budget in order. And this is something that I've been pushing for a long time down here. The president enacted this and set it up. This is a lot like the 1986 commission that Ronald Reagan set up to help us solve some of these problems. We're going to do the same thing now, get some recommendations back, have some business people involved in thinking about this, the way that a small business person would, the way that I think about things, and not like politicians. And that's going to come back to us and make some recommendations, which I think will be a big step forward. So those are a couple things that we can do. This is not a partisan issue. It's one of these common sense issues. Everybody knows you've got to get your budget in order, Democrats and Republicans, just like any family, just like any small business. These are the things, the steps that we needed to take to start getting there. We just got them both done in the last month or so, and I think we're going to start to see some impact here over the coming years.
So we've had several questions about the economy, which is obviously something that we really need to talk about. And one thing that the Congressman is doing is on Monday, he is going to be hosting an economic action summit in Saratoga Springs. This will be a chance for people to come together with experts, the public, small business owners, and the Congressman to discuss what we can do to build on the work we've been doing to get our economy moving again. That's going to be at 9 a.m. on Monday, and it is open to the public. Our next question is going to be coming from Kay, and Kay, you are live.
Thank you. Thank you, Congressman. It's very nice to talk to you. I'm very much concerned about the health care issue, and I wonder what major changes need to be made in the health care plan to make it palatable enough to pass?
Sure. Kay, I appreciate you asking about it. The healthcare system that we are working and have been talking about reforming down here has a number of problems, and I hear this consistently from people when I talk to people in the 20th District. People want to be sure that they are going to have choices in the healthcare system. They want to make choices about who the doctors are. They want to make choices about what kind of care they're going to get, and they are very frustrated with insurance companies or anyone else telling them what they have to do. They want to see us do these insurance reforms. Those are things that are important to me, to get rid of things like the pre-existing condition exclusion and lifetime caps on benefits so that if you get really sick, your insurance won't be there. And they want us to do things that are going to control the out-of-control costs that are bankrupting our families, that are making it so hard for people to afford insurance. They want us to do reforms that are going to bring those costs under control. And those are things that I'm excited about seeing. I want to see us have a health care bill that really does make a difference on those costs that our families are paying, that help our seniors that are struggling to pay for prescription drugs with the donut hole, that help people that are working make sure that their health care costs are not something that's going to drive them into bankruptcy. And one of the things that I think is really important, and I hear this all the time from people as I travel around the 20th District, is that we've got to cut waste, fraud, and abuse that's in the system. You know, many of you may have seen this 60 Minutes piece a few months ago where there was a drug dealer on there saying, I quit dealing drugs because it was easier to steal from Medicare. And that is a problem that we've got to fix. I saw that piece and have been doing a lot of work since then, have introduced legislation, and we're working on getting some of that language included in any kind of health care bill that passes, which will make it harder for people to steal from the Medicare system. It's a little bit complex, but it's not really hard. The government doesn't do what any small business would do, what you would do, in terms of checking to see if bills are real before they pay them. It's kind of like getting your credit card statement, just paying it for years without ever looking at the details to see if you've actually bought the things they were charging you for. That's what we do at Medicare. That's what we've got to change in the system. And those are things that I'm excited about seeing. And if we can end up with a bill, we right now don't know what we'll be voting on as the next step. But if we do something that is reforming insurance, protecting people's choices, and giving them more competition, controlling costs, and working on the Medicare waste, that's something that I will definitely be supporting.
So again, I'd like to remind everyone that if you have a question, just press *3, and you'll be connected to our staff, and you'll be able to ask that question. And if you'd like to opt in to our newsletter, just press *1 at any time, and you will be able to continue to receive updates from the Congressman. Our next question is going to be coming from Charles.
Yes. What do you plan on doing about the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy?
Sure, Charles. Thanks for asking about that. That's something I serve on the Armed Services Committee, and it's something that comes up regularly now in conversation. We saw earlier this year Chairman Powell, the former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, come out and say that it was time to end the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, that it wasn't working effectively for our military. We had Admiral Mullen come out this year and say that it was time to end the Don't Ask, Don't Tell policy, that it's not working for our military. I
agree with that. I'm a co-sponsor of the legislation to end Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Currently, the military is going through a review of how they would implement a change to the policy that would allow all people to serve in the military without having to lie about their sexual orientation. And we're going to see the end of that review and figure out the process for rolling this off. But I'm a co-sponsor of the legislation to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
So again, all the events that I have been announcing, all that information is on our website, which is scottmurphy.house.gov, and we send out information about all our events through our newsletter. You can press 1 to sign up for that. Our next question. Our next question is going to be coming from Melanie. Melanie?
Hi. Thank you for
I'm fine.
Thank you for taking my question. Campaign finance reform is critical, and I think it touches everything in politics. I know that you support the Fair Elections Now Act. I believe you signed on to that. But I am curious to know how important campaign finance reform is to you and where it is in your priorities and what you hope to be able to do for that problem that we have.
Sure, Melanie. Thanks for your question. Campaign finance reform, I think, is absolutely critical. It is a huge problem in our system that there is so much money sloshing around in Washington. And just recently, we had the Supreme Court rule in the Citizens United case that special interest groups can spend any amount of money they want to trying to influence the outcome of elections. And the Supreme Court ruled basically that special interest groups are treated like individuals with respect to having a free speech right to say anything they want. And I think it's absolutely wrong. I think it's a horrible thing for our political system that special interest groups could come in and put millions of dollars in TV ads attacking somebody or supporting somebody and really buy elections with massive amounts of money. We've been trying to figure out ways to solve this for many, many years, and I think it still continues to be a problem. The efforts that we have now in the House are to kind of mitigate that so the special interest groups can't just buy elections. And at the same time, I am a supporter of the Fair Elections Now Act, which is a way for us to allow people that make small donations to get their voice amplified. People would, like they do in the presidential election, be able to voluntarily put some money into a fund that would be used to help finance candidates so they don't have to just rely on super rich people, but if they can get small amounts of money from a lot of people in the district, then they would get some help, get some additional money to get their message out. And I think that Fair Elections Now would be very helpful, and I think it's really important that we find ways to restrain the special interest groups that, as a result of the new ruling in the Citizens United case, are going to have just free rein to go crazy in the political process, and it's a really bad development.
So I'd like to thank everyone again for participating. We've had more than 8,300 people on the call this evening. It's been a great opportunity for the Congressman to speak to you all. And again, if you have a question, just press *3, and if you'd like to opt into the newsletter, press 1. Our next question is going to be from Rena. Rena?
Hi. Hello, I'm a teacher at Ichabod Crane Middle School, and I'm sure you know that all the schools throughout the state are facing huge deficits. We have a $2 million deficit, and the three reasons given for this deficit is salaries, retirement, which are both contractual, and the third being health care. Our health care costs are crippling our schools, so not only is it a problem for our country, for our small businesses, but our schools are being asked, the property taxes are going to be raised to pay more for our health care. How are you addressing specifically and finally the health care issue?
Sure. Rena, thanks for your call and thanks for your work at Ichabod Crane. You know, my three kids go to public school in Glens Falls. They go to Sanford Street School, and I know how incredibly important strong public schools are to our communities and to our democracy in terms of getting kids educated and getting them going. And we do have a crisis in our schools. Just this week, I was in Averill Park at the high school there discussing with parents and teachers and administrators what's going on and what we can do to help our schools out. At a federal level, there's a couple things that we've been doing. One, we had the stimulus package last year, which sent money to our school districts to help with last year and this year's budget. Every school district in my congressional district, 117 of them all got funds to help them get through. The other thing that has to happen is Albany's got to get a budget done so that they can get you information about what you're really going to have this year, and that's a huge issue because they don't have a budget right now. Now, specifically, you were speaking about health care, and this is why we continue to work on this health care issue in D.C. The health care costs are spiraling out of control for our families, for our small businesses, for our school districts. Those costs in terms of health care are really, really driving the budget problems that we face. And this is why it's so incredibly important that we do insurance reform and hold the line and force our insurance companies to be more competitive. It's why it's so important that we put incentives into our system to help take costs out of the overall healthcare system. One of the big incentives that I like, something that wasn't in the House bill, but it is in the Senate bill, is wellness programs. Many of the private companies that I meet with that are large insurance buyers have been running these programs for the last few years and been very successful, where they incentivize their employees to help take care of their own health. It's what the doctors tell me that we need to do. It's what the hospitals tell me, and it has worked for so many people around the country. I'm hopeful that in healthcare reform we're going to be able to do that, where people get paid, they get some kind of discount on their insurance if they keep their blood pressure under control, if they take their medicine for that, or if they take their medicine for cholesterol, et cetera. So wellness incentives are one of the really important ways that we can help take cost out of our healthcare system and help hold those prices down that people are paying for insurance, and that will help all of our school budgets. So thanks for your service, and thanks for your question.
All right, so once again, I'd just like to remind everyone, if you have any questions, just please press star 3, and you'll be connected with a member of our staff. Our next question is going to be coming from Leonard.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Hi, Leonard. How are you? I can.
Good evening. Thank you very much for taking the question. What we are concerned about is the access that is being provided for broadband and the development of that, given the lag in our access to broadband in the rural regions comparative to some other parts of the world. Where the government has been involved in it, and what is being done currently to expedite the development of broadband. Thank you.
Absolutely. Yeah, well, thank you very much for asking it. This is one of my passions. I developed my small businesses. They were entrepreneurial, Internet-related companies, and I know how powerful high-speed access to the Internet is and how important it is to all of the rural communities across the 20th District. I like to say that we can't have a 21st century economy with a 19th century infrastructure. It's just not possible. We can't keep our kids here, and we can't build competitive businesses. I was up in Thurman, which is a small town up in the Adirondack Park, just recently with two women that run a goat farm up there. And they make goat cheese, and they were very successful in that they got in the Williams-Sonoma catalog for Christmas season last year. And they got so many orders. This was a year ago, actually. They got so many orders that they couldn't even download them all. They got to where they were spending 5 hours a day downloading orders from the Internet, and they had to sit there and watch it. And it was incredibly disruptive to their small business, even though it was all this new business. This year, they told Williams-Sonoma, we just don't want to be in your catalog because we just can't communicate, we can't get the information, and the Internet is just killing us. They are a small business that's not growing specifically because we don't have this infrastructure. You know, the analogy that makes sense to me is the rural electrification of our country in the 1930s. We knew that we couldn't get the power companies to go all the way out to all of our small towns and farms, but we made a commitment at the federal level that we needed to get power everywhere in our country. And we made that investment in the infrastructure, and as a result, our small towns were all able to get power and to thrive. We need the exact same thing here for broadband. We need federal dollars to be part of building that infrastructure. For me, this is exactly where government makes sense in economic development. You help with the infrastructure, and then you let the small businesses, like the goat farm in Thurman, thrive and use the Internet to build their businesses, not picking the winners and losers, but helping with the infrastructure. That's what we can do in government. Now, I've been working hard on this all year, and this is an area where a lot of my time goes. There was some stimulus money for broadband access.
and we were one of the biggest winners. Upstate New York won a $50 million combination of grant and loans for a group that is putting in a high-speed fiber ring all around upstate New York in a big circle to help make it less expensive for people to get broadband in their local community. So that the build-out will start here in the next several months, and that's something we've been working on. There are still more stimulus dollars for this, and we are working with about half a dozen different groups to apply for some more stimulus funds to get the broadband infrastructure started. So that's one that I really enjoy working on. Senator Gillibrand and I have introduced companion legislation, she over in the Senate and myself in the House, to have an Office of Broadband, Rural Broadband Development at the Department of Agriculture to focus all of the federal efforts on this and have a point person who's going to drive this to completion, because we need to have broadband access all over the country, and in particular in the 20th District. It's a real problem and something that we're working hard to address. So, Leonard, thank you very much for your question, and if you want to get involved in working on it, please get in touch with my staff, because we are working with people in a lot of different communities about their specific issues and their specific needs.
So again, if anyone would like to receive our weekly newsletter, which allows the congressman to let you know what he's been working on, the events he's going to be holding in your area, and sort of the things that he's feels are important, it's a significant part of his job is communicating. It's why we're doing it tonight and why he has his newsletter. So if you'd like to sign up for that, just press 1 and you will be signed up. Our next question is going to be coming from Judith. Judith?
Yes.
Hi, Judith. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks for being
good.
Here.
Hi. Excuse me. I'm very nervous talking, but I'm interested in tort reform in the health care bill. That's, to me, the number one thing in that bill to drive the cost down, and I just don't hear it talked about.
Yeah. There is. We do talk about it a lot. I've been a proponent of doing tort reform all along as we've been talking about health care and trying to figure out how do we do it most effectively and efficiently. We want to be sure that people who get hurt in an accident where somebody makes a mistake have some redress for that. If they, the classic story of somebody operated on the wrong knee, obviously there needs to be some protection for them. But at the same time, we know there's a lot of defensive medicine that's practiced in the world and a lot of cost that we could take out of the system. So there has not been, in the House bill, there was not nearly enough stuff, in my opinion. The later conversations, in particular after the President's bipartisan summit last week, there's been some more talk, and I think there's potentially going to be some additional stuff added to healthcare things. Some of the ideas that people think are going to be helpful, having a specialized court that only works on medical malpractice issues is one idea that might work. Something else that people are talking about, and I think maybe in a bill, is allowing doctors and patients to get together and have a conversation honestly about what happened, with that information not being allowed into evidence if there is a court case, a trial down the road, saying, look, the doctor can explain what the problem was, they can say they're sorry, but it doesn't get used against them. Because right now our system, if a doctor does make a mistake or there's something people are worried about, the doctors, because they're so worried about being sued, won't talk to the patients, their lawyers won't let them. And most people just want to know what happened I'm sorry this happened, or I'm sorry your spouse died, even if it wasn't their fault, often can alleviate some of this. One of the other tort reform ideas that's out there that I think would be a good one is having a judge make a ruling very early on in the case about whether or not it's a frivolous suit. And so some of the kind of most egregious suits can be thrown out early on, and that can reduce some of the pressure on doctors to be worried about this. So we are talking about a number of reforms. I don't think there have been enough in the bill so far, but some of those ideas are things that are being kicked around now, and I think possibly we might see some of them added, which would be a step in the right direction. And as you say, Judith, this is an issue that could save us all a lot of money and help us keep those health insurance costs down.
So thank you all again for calling in tonight. We've had a lot of great questions so far, and we're going to continue taking more. If you have a question, please press *3. And if you'd like to sign up for the newsletter, please press 1. Our next question is going to be coming from Carol from Pleasant Valley.
Hi, Carol. How are you?
Hi, Congressman Murphy. How are you?
I'm doing well.
I'm back to the jobs thing again. I've been kind of like not had a permanent job since about 2004 and been doing, you know, a lot of temporary work and things like that and getting very discouraged. And, you know, I'm just grabbing whatever I can find at this point, and some of the jobs only last a few weeks.
Yep.
And I'm not sure how I can survive. And I feel like something needs to be done to protect workers in this country. And I think it has a lot to do with what the other gentleman was talking about with the trade imbalance with China. And I'm just hoping that something more can be done about jobs, because I keep seeing the jobless recovery, and that's been going on for like at least 15 years that I know of. And nobody seems to ever address that problem, and I'm hoping that it's not a matter of not being able to be addressed, and that we just have to go on and on in the country with less and less jobs that are available to people.
Well, thank you, Carol. Thanks for calling, and I'm sorry that you're struggling. You're not alone. I can tell you that. I hear from people all the time that are trying to find jobs and are struggling to find good permanent work, and they bounce from one opportunity to the next as they're trying to find something. This is something that we work on every single day, and there are a lot of things that we can do. I referenced a few of the things with respect to China when I was speaking with Dan earlier. Some of the other stuff that we've been working on in Washington is to try to help get capital to our small businesses, because all of the studies, everybody that you talk to, it's small businesses that create about 80% of the jobs in this country, and mostly it's new small businesses that are less than 5 years old. The president's been talking about incentives for people to start new businesses, and I'm supportive of those. We've also been doing things with the SBA, which is the Federal Small Business Administration, to help increase the loans that's going out to small businesses and help them get more support as they try to grow and expand. And those are things that we've been doing since the stimulus package happened. We've seen a 90% increase in loans to small businesses through the SBA program. But one of the headwinds that we're all facing is the financial meltdown that we lived through over the last couple of years. You know, people in Washington down here where I'm working now were asleep at the switch trying to regulate the financial industries, and people on Wall Street took advantage of that, and they took risks that were unacceptable, and they got themselves overextended, and they took down all of us all across the country and all of our main streets with the risks that they took, and that is unacceptable. It's why I've been a big supporter of and very involved in the financial reform packages to get Wall Street back under control in terms of a regulatory environment that works and is healthy, and I think that that will ripple through and help everybody on Main Street all across this country. You know, the increase in SBA loans has been helping, but the big banks have been pulling back just as fast, and we've got to get them corralled, and we've got to get things moving in the right direction, and we passed some financial reform here in the House. It's still sitting in the Senate, and we need to get it done, because that is going to be critical to getting this economy moving again. So, Carol, keep your head up, and I appreciate that you're working so hard at it, and don't give up. I think that I can say with a pretty good degree of confidence that it's going to be getting better, and I think you're going to find some more opportunities around the corner if you keep at it, and thanks for your call tonight.
So I'd just like to remind everyone to press *3 if you have a question. Our next question is going to be coming from Mark in Clifton Park.
We're all talking about fraud in Medicare, and you saw the 60 Minutes report, and the government pays everything by legislation in 15 days so nobody can investigate and correct the bills. And why can't legislation be introduced to change that billing date to 30 or 45 days to give people a chance to investigate and prosecute this fraud?
Mark, you think like a small businessman, just like I do. That's exactly what I said when I saw that TV show. And so the details are Medicare, by statute, has to pay within 30 days, and they generally do pay it in about 15 days. That was passed 15 or 20 years ago. I'm sure it was well-intentioned. The doctors and hospitals came in and said, you know, Medicare's paying too slow. You got to make them pay faster. And Congress responded, and they thought they fixed the problem. Said they'll pay them in 30 days. But what they did was just created a different problem, which is now the criminals know that they pay it so fast that they don't have time to check it. So I did put in legislation. I got the 60 Minutes piece. I saw it. I got upset. I started calling around to the Justice Department and the Office of the Inspector General that oversees Medicare and started finding out what was broken and how we could fix it. And so we put in legislation in December and are working, gaining co-sponsors and trying to get it passed as part of health care reform or anything else that gets passed to fix this problem. How are we going to do that? We're going to put people on probation when they are a new provider and say that the people that run the Medicare program will check on them. They will call their customers and make sure the bills are legitimate. They'll check in with the doctors who are writing the prescriptions and make sure that they're not fraudulent. They'll do the same kinds of things you would do, any small business would do, if it was paying a bill. And we're going to do that to start out. And we're also going to use some basic things. There's a particular kind of wheelchair that Miami orders 50% of them for the whole country. They have 1% of the population. They order half of all the wheelchairs of this kind. Everybody can tell from just hearing that there's some fraud going on, but Medicare didn't have a process for doing anything about it. In our bill, if that happens and you find that, you would be able to freeze payments for those wheelchairs in that county while you do the investigation. So we are actually changing the rules and going to make it so that the investigators have a lot more authority to stop payments when there are suspicious things going on, to investigate new providers and anybody else that's in one of these fraudulent areas, and slow down all the fraud that is going on out there. So we've got that legislation going. We're starting to get bipartisan support around it. You heard Senator Coburn talk about this at the summit with President Obama last week or the week before, and I think there's real momentum around it. I think the president's getting interested in it, and I think both Democrats and Republicans are getting there, and I think we'll see something in the next few months that will get put into law and really make a difference. So we're going to fix this one. It's a perpetual battle because the criminals will come up with new ways to steal. We'll keep working on it, but it's something that I care about a lot and I spend a lot of time on.
So we've had a lot of great questions tonight. If you could all please, if you have more questions, just press *3 and you'll be connected to one of our staff members who will assist you. Our next question is going to be coming from Fred. Fred, go ahead.
Thank you. And thank you, Mr. Murphy, for taking this call. I had a couple of things, actually. One was on the health care, which has been certainly talked about already. But on the health care, I'm not sure if you have really addressed or made it clear whether or not you would support the existing health care bill that has already one time come through the House as well as the Senate, that I know you did not vote for, and I applaud you for that, because I don't believe there's too many people who even understand what's in that bill. But I'd like to know exactly what your position is right now should that same bill come in front of the House members at this point, whether or not you would support it.
Sure.
I just want, do I have the opportunity to make one more comment?
Sure, that's fine. I'll do one more, and I'll try to answer them both.
Okay. It just happens to be because health care is certainly a big issue, but I'm a small business owner, and I understand that you are a small business owner yourself. And I think basically regulations, taxes, concerns that small businesses have, even if they were able to borrow funds from small banks or larger lending institutions, the issues that a lot of small businesses have is regulations and concerns that the government, again, is going to interfere and control their business or make it very difficult for them to continue to do business. I mean, obstacles are being put in the way, and I'm sure you're aware of, small businesses. We need obstacles to be removed from small businesses so the entrepreneurial spirit can be alive and well once again. And I just wanted to make that comment because I think that, again, the American people have the resources and the ability to grow and prosper with the least amount of government interference, and right now we seem to have the opposite. But that was my comment, and you can address the health care if you would once again.
Sure. Thanks for it. I appreciate your comments. The House passed a health care bill in November that I voted against. One of the things that I didn't like about it was the imposition of a bunch of new requirements on small businesses. And I didn't think it did enough to control costs, which for my small businesses, and I'm sure for yours, is a critical issue, in particular with respect to health care, is how much does it cost to provide health care to people? A lot of our small businesses just can't afford to do that for their workers because the costs are so bad. So if that House health care bill came up to vote again today, I would vote no on it. I voted no on it before, and I would vote the same. The Senate passed a different bill. It has some similarities, but it's a very different bill and does a lot of things differently. In particular, it doesn't require that small businesses provide health care to all of their employees. It provides help for them if they want to through tax credits and what are called exchanges, which are a lot like if you use your chamber of commerce to band together with other small businesses and get leverage against the insurance companies to fight their power to get you to be able to be like a bigger company with more employees so you can get better pricing. So there's some things in the Senate bill that I actually think are very good. It's got some different problems, but it's something that I am looking at. And right now, this is how I approach my job. I'm reading the Senate bill. It's a long bill. It's over 2,000 pages. I think I'm about halfway through it right now and making progress on it every day. That's how I look at these things, because as a small business person, I feel like the details are really important, and you do need to read through this legislation and figure out what it does. So I'm considering that Senate bill if it comes up to us for a vote. But the House bill, I voted no on, and I would vote no on it again if it was in front of me right now. Now, I think I covered pretty much your question there. I guess the regulation piece is a very serious one, and that's I referenced that with respect to the health care issue. It's very frustrating for our small businesses. Things that don't seem like a big hurdle, I think sometimes the government, are huge hurdles to our small business people who are spending their time struggling to keep the revenue coming in and to pay the bills. And it's something I'm very familiar with. I started three different companies and have been involved with dozens of small businesses over my career as somebody who's been building small businesses. So I'm very aware of that. It's a very real and valid concern. It's a particular concern in New York even more than in other places, because we have a lot of state rules and regulations layered on top of everything else that the rest of the country has. And that's one of the reasons that I got involved in this life, was to try to make it better for our small businesses, because that's how we're going to get our economy moving again. So thanks very much for your call.
So we've got time for a few more questions. And again, if you would like to continue to hear from Scott, just press 1 and you'll be start receiving his newsletter. So our next question is going to be from Dave. Dave, go ahead.
Hi, I appreciate your taking the time to listen to my question. I'm a registered independent, and I voted twice for your predecessor. And I was very disappointed that she did a complete flip-flop on her previous attitudes regarding representing her constituents when she became senator. And I had supported her so much that I actually called the governor and complimented him on his choice and so on and so forth. I guess what I'm asking is, in regard to things like health care and cap and trade, what I've been hearing so far this evening is very good. Your opinions have been cost-cutting and things of that nature. And partial answer to my question was the previous one, where you reinforced the idea that you were not afraid to vote for your constituents based on your outlook, and we're willing to vote against the House health care bill. And part of my question earlier when I was speaking to your representative was, are you willing to remain an independent voice that truly represents your constituents rather than become a rubber stamp for the large Democratic machine that seems to want to steamroll over the little people of this country that pay for everybody? So I applaud your efforts on the cost cutting, and I'm willing to listen with an open mind. And I'm more than willing to support you if you stick to your guns and look at things from the independent viewpoint. And I'm just asking, are you willing to continue that? If so, you'll have independent support. And, reason out all the...
Thank you, Dave, very much. I appreciate your thoughts. And absolutely, I'm going to continue to do what I think is right. going to be what I think is going to be the best policy for people in the 20th District, and I'm going to agree with Democrats sometimes, I'm going to agree with Republicans sometimes, and I'm always going to agree with what I think is the best answer for everybody in our district. They, you know, they just did a, recently they ranked all the members of the House in terms of, you know, are they liberal or conservative or centrist, and I came out as one of the five most centrist people in the House, and that's just the way I solve problems. I'm a small business guy. I look at problems and try to come up with the best solution. I never sat around with any of my businesses trying to figure out where we were going to come up with the money to pay the bills and said, oh, well, the Democrats would do it this way and the Republicans would do it that way and we're going to do one or the other. That's just not how people solve problems in life. You look for the best answer, and sometimes a Democrat may have that idea and sometimes a Republican may, and I'm going to just try to come up with the best answers, and I'm sure that I will do things that you agree with and things that each of you disagree with. I think I've voted on 800 things since I've been down here, so there's a lot of issues, but I'm going to try to do the best I can to come up with the best answers for everybody in our district, and that's not going to follow a party line, that's for sure, and that's just who I am.
So we're going to have time for one last question, and then Scott will give a brief closing. If your question did not get answered, you'll be able to just stay on the line, and you can leave a message, and our staff members will get back to you. So for our final question, we're going to go to Dorothy.
Hello, Congressman.
Hi, Dorothy. How are you?
Hi. Listen, I am an independent also, and I'm really happy with overall what you've been doing, especially when you had the courage to vote against the health care. And my question for you is this. Most of us are extremely concerned about the deficit and what's facing our children and grandchildren. And I know you mentioned before that they have an advisory group that's going to talk about how things can be cut. My question for you is, in the past, when they really wanted to get something done, they had a base closing commission. And then it was bipartisan, and then they were to look at it, and then whatever their recommendations were, it was a straight up and down vote. And therefore, all of the patronage and all of the big states versus the little states or the powerful, you know, people in Congress versus people who were new, really that didn't come into play. And so all of us lost bases that, you know, some people were really nostalgic about, a lot of armories closed, including places right here in this area. Now my question for you is, would you like to get something going with some kind of support of an actual thing the way they did the base closing? Say, for example, I'll take a little one, National Historical Sites. There's a lot of national historical sites. I'm a political science major. I love to go to this stuff. My hobby is actually, one of my hobbies is going to presidential homes all over the country. All right?
Okay.
Now,
yes, we've got several in this.
But there are a lot of places that we can't afford to keep as national historical sites, and you'd have to have a truly bipartisan, neutral group look at it, and then they bring it back and say, here it is, it's an up or down vote. And then,
Dorothy,
you know, you're going to win some and lose some. How do you feel about that?
I think that you've got it absolutely right on the head. I was a co-sponsor of legislation to do just that. We were pushing this all fall, and this was something that finally came to a vote about a month and a half ago, and it was so depressing. It was the most cynical thing, it may be the most cynical thing I've seen in the year that I've been working in Washington. The vote came up in the Senate, and there were enough people that had said they were going to support it to pass. It's exactly what you described. It was going to be a deficit reduction commission with teeth, with an up or down vote. Seven of the co-sponsors, people who had signed up as co-sponsors of this bill to tell their constituents how they were going to do this, voted no when it finally came up for a vote, and they killed the bill so that it didn't pass. It was unbelievably cynical. It was ridiculous behavior, and it was very depressing. So what the president did, because it failed in the Senate, he set up this presidential commission. It's not as strong. It doesn't require the same up or down vote that we would have had with the commission that we were trying to pass, but it's a step in the right direction. So I do support the idea. I think you're absolutely right. It's tough decisions when you make budgets, but it's the same tough decisions that Americans make every day and people all over the 20th District make every night when they sit down and say, do I have enough money to go out this weekend to dinner, or do I need to save my money up to pay the car payment this week? So those are the kinds of decisions people make. We've got to make the same decisions here in Washington, and I think the independent commission to do that is a good way to get there, and that's why I was a supporter of it, and I still am. So I want to say really thanks to all of you for taking the time to be here, and please let us know in our office if we can help help you work on any issues that you may have. If you're working on getting an SBA loan for your small business, or if you've got an issue with the IRS, or you're working to get some veterans benefits for you or a family member, these are things that we try to do, cutting through red tape to help people. That's what our offices are there for. We've got an office in Hudson, one in Clifton Park, one in Saratoga, and one in Glens Falls, or you can visit us online anytime. So feel free to do that. We've got upcoming events on the website, and again, you can press 1 to join our newsletter, and if you want to stay on the line, you can leave a message for me or my staff to follow up with you, but we really do appreciate people being here, and I appreciate and am honored that you let me represent the wonderful district of the 20th, because it is a great place to live, and it's an honor to represent you. So again, if you want to get in touch with us, feel free to go to scottmurphy.gov, www.scottmurphy.house.gov, www.scottmurphy.house.gov, and otherwise, I really appreciate it, and we'll look forward to seeing you at a town hall meeting in your neighborhood soon.